From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 20 edition of Commodity Week. The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture has briefed the president on the drought in the Midwest. Is it the beginning of the end now that the media has begun to write about it? Or is it just the beginning of the rise? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dave Smalt of FC Stone. Our panelists today in studio include Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson in Champaign, Illinois. From Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Pete Manhart, and in Lafayette, Indiana, Mike Zuzolo. Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming. And on the right-hand side of the page, a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's start with this question. The United States Department of Agriculture Secretary was on camera and in the White House this week talking about the drought. Usually that sometimes means the media gets hold of the marketplace and it signals the beginning of the end. Corn futures rallied 84 cents in the nearby September. Nearby August beans were up, $1.62¾ on the week. Is that high enough at this point, Jackie Vakes?
Well, when you ask about the beginning of the end, weather markets normally run 6 weeks. We just completed our fifth. So it's possible that it could be the beginning of the end. The only question that we have right now is, are we going to have any change in the weather, and is it going to be enough that it's going to save the bean crop? Because the corn crop is really not in good enough shape, at least here in Illinois and in this part of the Midwest, I don't think any more to be saved. We have a client who was out in his field last Wednesday. Corn was blistered and all the way to the top of the cob. And this last Monday, it was 100% dented. So we talk about the next big thing we have to deal with is late test weight. And so with the media, I don't know, every hairdresser on earth has been buying corn all along now for the last 3 weeks, you know. it definitely could if we get some type of something that happens here. I guess what I'm watching is to see when the markets begin to actually pay attention to Europe and what's going on over there.
Pete Manhart?
I don't think it's near over yet. I think corn could go another dollar, dollar and a half. I think beans could go to 20. I think it's scary out there how small a crop is and how much it's getting smaller. USDA had us at 146. I know people that are looking at 120 or less. We have to have higher prices to cut usage. We're cutting it now, but I don't think enough. And I think we're ready for all the way into harvest to see it go up and back off a little like we've been doing. We didn't go straight up this week. We dropped last week one day 70 cents on beans, 63 on corn. The next day, we were right back up there. We made new highs almost every day this week on beans, but we backed off 20 to 40 from them. So I think we're still on a roll going up.
And Mike Zuzolo.
Well, Todd, I think that it's about beans now. I think you're 100% right. It's all been about corn in the media. And I think between that and the end users, I think, are starting to come to terms with the corn crop being as bad, if not worse, than they were fearing 2 weeks ago, that the reality is hitting. Between that and the idea that I think the demand is starting to fall nearly as fast, if not as fast, as the supply in the corn, and then you throw on top of that the massive support the corn has gotten from the wheat market, and it looked like at the end of this week the wheat market looks like it maybe is getting a little bit top-heavy technically, and the Indian monsoons have finally caught, which I think was a big driver, along with what was going on in Russia and the Black Sea on the wheat. So I think corn has probably less likelihood to feed the bull at this point and needs to rely upon the beans at this stage of the game. And I think the bean-corn ratio supports that. I think the meal exports, the weekly exports this past week, support that. And I think finally, when USDA came out and their meteorologist for the Office of the Chief Economist came out and said 88% of the corn area, 87% of the bean area is under drought, and we're looking at, in his words, searing triple-digit heat and dry conditions persisting through most of the next week, I think that should probably create a little bit more reaction in the bean trade relative to the corn.
Let's stay with the wheat for just a second because you mentioned it, and it did have an oddity. That was to July of next year, because when you look across the grains floor, everything was up with the exception of that wheat contract for next year. Settlement price there at $8.19.5 was down 10¾ cents on the week. September, by the way, the nearby was at $9.43¼ for the old crop. It was up 95.5 cents. That July wheat contract an indicator to you, Mike, of anything in the marketplace that might be a problem?
No, not really. I think we saw a similar trade in the November 12 versus November 13 bean spread. As long as it's a bull spread that's being activated, Todd, I think that still suggests the trade is caught short and needs to pull the premium to the front end and attract the supply side, the people holding the supply, to let go of those supplies. So I think it's a healthy way to trade when it comes to what kind of conditions we're dealing with. The other thing is the 88-89 market that we talk a lot about. That was a big leader in wheat was a big leader in late 88 because the drought never really came around and really subsided until we got into 89. So I think this year, as we get ready to plant the wheat here in this country in that September-October time frame, the drought's going to be probably more important than anything else. It'll be the wheat, and at the same by the same token, in between September and November, the South Americans will start to be planting beans. So I think we need to start looking maybe 3 months down the horizon when it comes to the new crop stuff.
September corn this week, a high of $8.28¾, a low at $7.49¼. Settlement price there was $8.24½, up 84 cents on the week. December contract, $7.95¾. Its settlement price on the week, 55.5 cents higher. Remember, we give you the high, the low, and the settlement price on the week, all of the trade. The high, by the way, in December contract for corn, $7.99. Could not make a brand new high for its life. But got really close, and $7.49¼ was the low on the week. When you look at the corn crop, Pete, USDA, of course, is at a 146. Most people are using a number much lower than that. What do you think it is at this time, and how much lower might it go?
Well, a lot of industries at 128 to 132. I'm not that high. I think it's under 130, 125 maybe. But it's going to be blazing hot for the next 2 weeks, and whatever's there now won't be there in 3 weeks. So I think in the next week we'll blow through eight and be like the beans were this week, even more than that 55 cents we got this week on the corn.
So it's just not blow there. Through $8
blow through $8 corn. And take off again.
Jackie?
Oh, I don't disagree with Pete at all. In fact, I was disappointed that we couldn't put in a new all-time high on Deese, and Deese has really lumbered around a lot. But when you look at, I think Sunday night could be a time that we could gap higher again, just like we've done a number of nights.
That would be, what, the sixth week in a row?
Yes. And so I think it could happen. When you look at December corn, we've picked up $2.89¾ in the last 5 weeks. You know, so it's a pretty hefty weekly increase, and this week was one of the biggest ones. And so the corn situation, what's interesting is, you know, in reality, if we take all harvested acres right now, I'm probably in Pete's camp, all right? I think by the time that we get to the end of this, we will see a lot of harvested acres that will disappear from grain and go into corn silage, and therefore we may actually end up with a 136, 140, something like that, just because, but not production, you know? And so people have to be careful when they're looking at those numbers and talking those numbers.
Yeah, you know, if we have 2-3 million acres of zero or wiped out,
yep.
And they're chopping stuff now, and I know of one case where 100 cattle died because they didn't test it for nitrates. But
yep.
They're, you know, if we add all the acres and put it in there, that's what I'm talking about. But in this last 3 weeks, we haven't went straight up. Mm-hmm. One day last week, we would dropped 63 cents in 1 day from the high. came back to only down 12 on the day. We roared since. We've done that this week. We went up to the high, went back 25 cents. It hasn't been just straight up. It's been orderly. People have had time to take profits. Other people were getting in.
Well, if they've got time to do those things, they probably have time, Mike, in order to get in and protect profits too, whether that be crop insurance or cash sales of some sort, or whatever they're producing that is in the field. What do you expect?
Well, I think the natural hedge in a drought area, based upon my experience, is that you've got to work your basis. I think that if you get into the field of corn and you start shelling and it's worse than you thought it was, Todd, I think the first person you call is your wife, and the second person is probably going to be your elevator guy. Well, that guy's going to get a bunch of calls saying the exact same thing. He's going to realize and tell his higher-ups, it's worse here than I thought. And if that demand's still there, then they're going to need to bid that up. So I think basis is your best natural hedge. I remember people have asked, have you ever seen a drought like this? And actually, in northwestern Ohio in 2002, I think it was just about as bad in a very tiny area. Mm-hmm. Nothing on this scale, obviously, but in terms of actual regional or sub-regional drought, it was awful in 2002 over there, and corn in Van Wert, Ohio, and down by Fort Recovery, Ohio, some of the big poultry feeders, they were pulling corn all the way from Lafayette over there. I think that's the kind of thing we'll see again, only on a much, much grander scale. So that basis is huge this year as a natural hedge. So I think that's the place to start. The other thing about how high is high and next week and things like that, I think we would all agree that the meal has really been the big, big leader. I mean, yep. It's been the big dog in this market ever since South America's weather market. And we ran $120 a ton higher from the December low of last year to the March high this year. If you throw that $120 a ton on top of the April high, then you're talking about around the $5.55 area for lead month meal. We just got right up against that late this week. So I think the meal's a huge player next week as far as how much more bullishness and how many more new longs we can bring into this market.
August soybeans, let me get those numbers in real quick. 17.57.5 the high, the low at 16.10. Settlement price at 17.57.5, up $1.62.75. November at 16.86.25, $1.33.75 higher in the bean pit.
Well, and, I'll put on to the meal side of it, too. I think that the meal side of it has been a tremendous leader, but I think it's really picked up its pace since we're starting to hear ethanol plants say DDGs are only guaranteed for a week. And, when you look at the bigger picture, it's very difficult when you're feeding dairy cows, hogs, poultry to just switch overnight. It just doesn't work well. And so we are seeing some move over to canola meal, but I think that beans themselves have the opportunity to just continue to go. And it's the right time of year for beans to go. There's not much that we can do on corn anymore. Corn's very, very strict on what it does, where when it comes to beans, there's a lot of other things that can happen.
Yeah, I agree that the meal's the leader, and with less of the DDGs, we're going to need more meal. The problem with all of that is how many livestock are just going to be washed away because they have no feed, no hay, no corn to feed them. And so we're going to cut out usage there. But I think the bean crop itself is going down daily. Also, I've got lots of farmers walking fields saying one pod per node or less, not even one pod per node. And unless they get rain, and we have none predicted for 2 weeks with blazing heat, I don't see the beans making near what they're projecting.
Live cattle futures this week, a $123.10 settlement price for $1.65. The September feeders at $138.52.5 were down $3.62.5. That's the second week in a row they were sharply lower. We understand why that's happening. So liquidation, kind of a glut in the process. They're one of the first ones, I suppose, that are beginning that process of destruction of some demand in the future. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, what are we, 20 bucks from the high of not very long ago on feeders? Who wants to buy one if you can't feed it anything and make any
$1.38. Let's see. I went back and looked at that. It was $1.64 in February.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 20 bucks or more or less.
Yeah, when you look at the feeder situation, a number of our guys out in Nebraska and Kansas, especially Kansas, the guys who are stockers, I mean, they're just bringing cattle into the barn. They've got no pasture. They have no place to go with it. The corn crop isn't doing well. It just doesn't look good for them. And so I think in the near term, we're going to see cattle prices back off. But when you look at the deferred, that's going to be a whole different story because of the fact that they're selling out a lot of these small feeders. It's going to make a shortage in the long run.
And even locally, the cow man that's got 10 head, 30 head, 50 head, they don't have any feed either, and they're getting rid of them. I had one of my cattle feeders that, he has 50 head. He tried to buy corn this week to feed him. Elevator wants 860 to 880.
Yeah.
He's going to get rid of cattle.
Mike, any quick word, make it fast, on the livestock numbers?
Jackie's numbers on the on-feed anecdotally match up with Friday's cattle on feed. On-feed was 103 on the high end, and pork and beef inventories in the freezers as of June 30th are the largest ever for this date. So we've got a lot to work through on the red meat side.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to folks in studio. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and, of course, Mike Zuzulo, that last voice you heard from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. They'll be back along with FC Stone's Dave Schmalt in just 2 minutes.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was another hot and dry week for most of Illinois. Temperatures in the state were running about 4 to 8 degrees above normal. Some substantial rain fell in northeast Illinois with amounts between 1 and 3 inches. Elsewhere, the rains were widely scattered with amounts far less than an inch in most cases. Because of continuous hot and dry weather, the U.S. Drought Monitor has expanded the coverage of severe, or D2 drought, coverage in Illinois to 95%. Only a small area in northeast Illinois is rated in moderate drought. The forecast from the National Weather Service paints a grim picture for Illinois in coming weeks. Temperatures are expected to be 8 to 10 degrees above normal this weekend and through next week. There is little chance of rain this weekend and only a slight chance on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. The new outlook for the month of August came out and shows that all of Illinois is at a higher risk for above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation next month. The outlook for the three-month period of August through October also calls for all of Illinois to be at a higher risk of above-normal temperatures and below-normal precipitation. The drought outlook was released at the same time and showed drought persisting in Illinois for the next 3 months. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the July 20 edition of Commodity Week from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. On the phone line is Dave Schmalt. He's the Vice President of Operations at FC Stone, located in Des Moines, Iowa. He's been with the firm for about 25 years. He also serves as the risk management consultant to clients in both the agricultural and energy industries. And more importantly for us today, Dave provides risk management to ethanol clients, producing a combined total of about 500 million gallons of ethanol. That consumes about 180 million bushels of corn. Dave, thank you so much for taking the time with us. Tell me about the condition of the ethanol plants as they look forward to the next couple of months and then past the harvest season. Can they continue to operate? Will they have to cut back? How will RINs operate in the system? Give me your broad scope view, please.
Sure. Well, thanks for inviting me to join in. Enjoyed listening to the panel there and seen very much the same thing that they are and feel very similar to them and their thoughts on markets. So, you know, as far as the ethanol industry, they had been running at some fairly significant negative margins probably 4 to 8 weeks ago. They came back into where they were break-even to maybe, again, depending on where their costs are, break even to maybe a nickel to a dime loss on things. They are still looking at that loss here for August and September. They've got some margins going forward. And again, it really depends. You'll see with the plants that are across the Midwest, they can vary at least a dime on average between their costs. And that, in this type of environment, makes a difference and, you know, makes a world of difference, in fact, as to how they're running that plant. Ever since those negative margins hit that we had, you know, for July, August, and Sep, we've seen the cutback in production. We've seen the shutdown of several plants, Valero in particular, the largest one, cutting back, taking two of their plants down. A lot of the plants, though, when you only have one or two plants that you have, and that's your livelihood, that's your whole investment and revenue coming, they'll keep running in the red as long as they can cash flowing and look for better days to come. So they've struggled, though. They are still looking at how to buy in that corn for the September period in particular. I would say the industry, you know, at best probably has 30% of their corn bought out in that time slot. Some might be higher, but when you can't sell the ethanol for a positive margin, you don't go after the corn quite as aggressively. And that's really been the case. They're always looking at running it on a margin-based basis. And that means if I'm buying corn, I need to look at, can I get a ethanol sale off against that that can lock in at least a margin I can live with.
What kind of advice are you giving corn farmers, your corn people, on what they ought to be doing now in the markets?
It's really hard to give a general. As you guys all know, each one is different depending on how much you have sold. A lot of our grain elevators that we work with, they're getting calls from producers saying, I need to buy back some of my sales to you. I need to buy out of them. I don't think I'm going to produce that much. And so we're hearing more of those calls. Now, that's probably not the general sense out there, but that's kind of the mode we're in. I think the whole market is in a little bit of a panic mode in here as these prices have skyrocketed and as we try to, determine what is that yield. I agree. We just don't know. If it continues on with these 2 weeks of heat, we know it's going to get worse. So I think that the best thing they can do is continue to sell into the rallies to a level that they're comfortable with, that they can live with. And that's not only this crop year, but the next crop year, too.
You know, Dave, I want to bounce back to ethanol. When you talk about negative margins, are you talking about just straight ethanol margins? What about the byproduct DDGs, which rides right with the corn market?
Well, and that's really the whole thing. When we look at margins, it's their ability to buy the corn in and that gas. Those are their two main, costs. Obviously, corn is 85% of their cost. But taking the ethanol and the DDGs out on that other side. So that really comes down when we talk about margins. What is their net margin for that plant on those gallons they're producing? The DDGs, obviously, with the slowdown we'd had since we started getting the weekly numbers from the government on ethanol production, we had our lowest one at 802,000 barrels. And, that number could get a little bit smaller. And obviously, when that happens, we're seeing less DDGs go out the door. But they are going out at a much higher rate, and I think everybody's looking at: are we going to have DDGs around? Are we going to be able to count on those in the coming months, or will they become even more scarce?
Dave, when it comes to the livestock side, and I don't know if you manage the risk on this side, but if you've got any evidence or anecdotal comments on that. Two quick questions. The short-term side, is the liquidation of the fact of the feeder cattle and the feedlots and also the hogs and to a lesser degree poultry on autopilot at this point in your view? And are the consumers of meat in the longer term, after we get through some type of liquidation, are they the people that buy meat to get their dietary needs taken care of, are they facing a food crisis? And I guess I'm really trying to pinpoint and ask you, do you think China is in a really tough spot right now with their pork prices being such a big factor of their CPI?
I don't deal on the livestock side. We have our group out of one of our Kansas City offices deals with that, and they'd be much better to ask that question. I do think, though, just from what we're hearing, we're seeing the numbers coming in off the grass, or is it because there isn't any, they don't want to feed them. We're seeing stuff come in much earlier. Places are full. I think that trend will continue, and that's going to drive prices higher. I think the China, the government's going to step in and make things work. They've made that commitment to the pork industry over there. We saw it last year. They went in and bought wheat. We could see more wheat usage over there. And I think their biggest concern is going to be on the bean side and protein, just like everyone else. You know, when you look at where our bean production could end up this year and what happened in South America in the spring with their drought-reduced crop, we could see a situation where we just don't make it to South America's crop next year. We just are running out of beans. South America's limited capacity, to export, and that's part of the problem. So depending on how small our crop gets, it could get very interesting next JFM on the bean side of things and along with that on the meal.
Dave, could you take up the RINs for me very quickly? Will they be used, and if they are, how difficult will that make life for the ethanol plants?
Well, I think it's going to we're going to need that. You know, we've got about 2.5 million RINs that can go forward, and we can carry those forward. The thing to remember on the ethanol, the petroleum industry has put this into their mix of fuels, and for them to switch out, number one, they don't have enough of the current EO spec gas. It's used for octane performance. All these factors we think could take a turnaround of 2 to 3 months to where they could get out of using as much ethanol. And before they do that, we'd probably need to see ethanol at about a 20 to 30 cent price above RBOB, which we are not at currently. So, you know, even if there were a mandate, if there were waivers of the mandate, we could still see the industry using ethanol because that's how it's been set up. That's what they're used to working into the blends. And to change that, like I mentioned, it's not only economic, but also it's a time consideration.
Dave, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Dave Smolt. He's the Vice President of Operations at F.C. Stone. One final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Mike Zuzulo. We have a minute and a half left, and I want you to talk, all three of you, quickly about protecting crop insurance. Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, I think the bought puts is the route that I would prefer, Todd, in a scale-in approach, similar to what Dr. Good talked about earlier this week. There are clients that want to do short futures, recognizing they're going to have to live for 3 months with a margin call, even if they sell futures and buy calls. They're going to have to live with a margin call. So want to get the bank involved and have direct lines of wiring or ACHs if that's going to be the case. That's how I'm operating.
Pete Manhart?
I think the buying puts stirred up. You can buy a 750 put now at 50 cents. If we go up another 50 next week, that'll be cheaper, and we might even look at $8 puts. But I think you have to look at buying, you know, 750 and up puts to control having at least a $7 base.
And Jackie Banks.
Yep. And I'm very much in favor of doing puts that are closer to the money just because I don't have as much trust in this market as anybody else does. I don't trust the European situation, even though I know we're going to have a lot of heat. So there's some combinations that you can do, buying a put, selling some puts underneath, buying a put, selling some calls. There's just a lot of different things you can do.
Thanks much to our panelists, Jackie Vakes, Pete Manhart, and Mike Zuzulo. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the July 20 edition of Commodity Week.